Hello, and good morning to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebar. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are going to be continuing looking at our study in the book of Genesis. Last week, we kind of put to bed some of the earlier creations and comings abouts of things and started into the life of Abram. From chapter 1 of Genesis all the way to about chapter 12, we dealt with, how the world was created, how animals came into being, mankind coming into being, what God's expectations were, what man's job was, how the fall came about, how sin entered into the world, what happened with Satan and Adam and Eve in the garden that day. And then we got into, of course, the creating of technology such as domestication of animals and farming. We saw the creation of instruments and blacksmithing, all of these things, all of these firsts and originations. Okay, we're kind of looking at how all this stuff came into be. And then finally, in this part of Genesis, like we saw at the end of chapter 12, and then chapter 13 last week, we start to really get into how the Hebrew nation came to be. We've gone from the Genesis, the beginning of the world, to the Genesis, rather, of the Hebrew nation, and of course, how God's redemptive plan is going to work out into the world. And so last week, specifically in chapter 13, we saw that Abraham loses his faith a little bit, goes down to Egypt, and makes some horrible, horrible decisions in Egypt, and sells his wife, this kind of thing. And then he's rebuked, of course, by this pagan king of, how could you do this? This is actually your wife. I was going to marry her, da-da-da-da-da. Y'all, get your stuff and get out of here, okay? We run out of Egypt, we come back up, and we tell Lot, look, there's problems here, we can't, my wealth is too great, your wealth's too great, we're fighting, pick what side of the world you want to go to, and I'll go to the other. And so then we finally see, of course, Abraham remove another problem, another problem from his life. He's getting rid of Lot, he's starting to listen to God, he's in a land where he's supposed to be. In chapter 14, opens up with kind of the consequences to some degree of bringing Lot, but it also is going to be showing us a valuable lesson in the growth of Abram. He's starting to go through the motions that he's supposed to go through. He's starting to become the man that God wants him to be. And while we're going through chapter 14, I'm just going to warn you right off the bat. We have a ton of names in chapter 14. Okay. I get some criticism every now and again because I do not pronounce these names exactly the way the Hebrew would require them to be pronounced. As I told all of you, pronunciation of words, it does not matter. It does not matter. If you get caught up on that, so be it. That's absolutely foolish of yourself. But when you look at all of these names, because I hope that all of you are looking at chapter 14 and going along with us as we, in your own Bible as we're going through the study today. But when you're looking at all these names, the way they are written in English versus the way they are pronounced in Hebrew is totally different. And there's no way you would know it without actually knowing it. So don't worry about pronunciation. I am not going to pronounce them the way that they are expected to be. I'm going to pronounce them the way that you're going to recognize what word I'm reading and how you would probably say it and what you're going to understand to be how it would be pronounced in English, okay? And if we ever decide we need to have a pronunciation class, we'll go through and we'll highlight all these very, very weird things, because there's not a one of these words in here that reads the way you think it's going to read, but we're going to read it that way anyway, because I would rather you know what's going on than to be confused by proper pronunciation. Okay? So there's going to be a lot of names. There's going to be a lot of places. We're going to move very slow through it. I'm going to help you digest everything that's going on here as we are getting into the more simple parts of chapter 14, which is later on down in the story. So here we go. Let's get into chapter 14. It says, "And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinam, king of Admah, and Shemember, king of Zeboiim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. All these were joined together in the vale of Siddim, which is the salt sea. 12 years they served Kedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled, and in the 14th year came Kedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote the Rephaims in Ashtaroth Carnaim, and the Zuzims in Ham, and the Emims in Sheveh Kiriathaim, and the Horites and their Mount Seir unto El Hazazon Tamar. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admah, and the king of Zeboiim, and the king of Bela, the same is Zoar. And they joined battle with them in the vale of Siddim, with Kedorlaomer, the king of Elam, and with Tidal, king of nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, 4 kings with 5. And the vale of Siddim was full of slime pits. Then the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they that remained fled to the mountain." All right. So what goes going on here is you have this Kedorlaomer. Okay. That's the technical way of saying it. When you look at it, you're probably going to think Kedorlaomer. All right. He is the head honcho of this area. He's had all of these kings under his thumb for 12 years. And in typical human behavior, they decide, we don't want to serve this guy anymore. We want to do our own thing. Does that sound kind of familiar? We want to do our own thing, so we are going to rebel against him. And the 4 kings that do that are Sodom and Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and then Shemember, king of Zeboiim. Okay, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. So all of these kings decide they are going to rebel against this particular man, this king, Kedorlaomer, who runs this federation of other smaller groups, kings, this kind of thing. And they decide they're going to go against him. They're going to do things their way. Very typical human behavior. All throughout the Bible, you're going to see conquest and takeover and conquest and takeover and rebellions. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. That's just history. Okay. So all of this is going on. We have and Sodom and Gomorrah and these other kings, they decide they are going to rebel, and they go and they fight this battle in the Valley of Siddim. Okay. Now Siddim is known for its slime pits. Okay. What's very interesting about this is that the idea of the slime pit is that it's actually like an asphalt pit, meaning that you can fall in and it just cuts you to pieces and it'll kill you. Okay. So there's all of these pits throughout there, places that you can die and fall, it says. And of course, Sodom and Gomorrah and these other kings, they lose horribly. Many of them fall and die in these pits, and then many of them flee into the mountains, okay? And after they do this, it says, "And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods and departed." All right. So we have this uprising of all these kings. They're fighting one another. there's this, we're going to break away from this group. They lose. Many of them die in this valley, falling into just the natural landscape. The rest of them escape into the mountains. And after they lose the battle, in true Old Testament conquest fashion, they go in and they take all the stuff that's there. Take every single thing. And part of what they take is Abram's brother's son, Lot, right? The guy we were never supposed to bring with us. He ends up getting captured in this battle and all this taking of the spoil. And they leave and they take all of this with them. Okay. Now, for Lot, of course, this is really kind of a wake-up call from God of, you better get your act together. You just got taken in all these battles. You're running with these bad people and these bad groups. But for the rest of them, you know, it kind of seems like at first that this isn't, you know, really a big deal. We're just kind of getting a history lesson. All this happens, these people get taken. But many of us don't realize that in this day and time, when a family member was taken or was captured or done wrong or murdered, it was the responsibility of the patriarch, the leader of the family, to deal with this issue. And so it gets back to Abram that he has been taken. It says, and they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, his brother of Eshcol and the brother of Aner, and these were confederate with Abram. Okay? So they come to Abram and they say, look, your brother has been taken captive. It says, and when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. So somebody has escaped out of this group of people that is taken. They come to Abram and they say, look, Lot has been taken by this group. Abram, being the leader of the people, being the leader of his family, the patriarch of the family, is going to go and rescue him. And what's amazing about Abram is that while he's going to begin living by faith, he had some common sense about him. Notice that it says that he had 318 trained servants, meaning that he had guys who were in definite need of or had guys that he had put back inside that were trained for war. He was living in an area that he knew was going to be very rough. He was living in an area that he knew was going to have problems and issues and things of that nature. And so he had began building, amassing this group of people that not only were going to take care of his wealth, but were also trained for fighting in case a day came that they needed to defend themselves. You know, and one of the biggest mistakes that we tend to make as believers is we think that living by faith means that we just remain complacent to what's going on in the world, that we're, oh, well, God will take care of it. That's true. God will. But God also expects us to use some common sense and to, you know, consider, be prudent in making decisions and in our day-to-day lives. And so here we have Abram. He's the leader of the family. He has this responsibility to go and get Lot, even though Lot's done all this wrong. If Lot hadn't been where he was, he would not have had these issues and problems. And however, despite that, Abram says, he's my brother's son. I am going to go and get him. And so he has these trained servants and he gets all of them and he pursues these guys to Dan, which is all the way in the northern part of what would soon later be the kingdom of Israel. Now, when we're looking at this story, there's a couple of things we need to start to take away, first of all, as far as application for your life, because this is pretty cut and dry, right? We have this group of kings. They don't want to be ruled anymore. They go to battle. They lose. where this story starts to actually unfold and take place is that Lot gets captured. Okay, that's what makes this story relevant to the rest of the Bible. And what we have to look at and learn from this is doing the right thing for the right reason. Okay? The right thing was for Abram to go and rescue Lot. All right? Now, we weren't supposed to have taken Lot. Remember, we weren't supposed to take Lot with us. This is part of why we weren't supposed to take Lot. Lot chose to go and live with these people, and in the middle of all of this problems and issues and evil doings. However, despite all of that, the right thing to do was go and get him. So Abram is willing to go and do what's right, go and get him. But he also, as you're about to see, is doing it for the right reason. It's not for Lot. It's because of what God expects of him to do. And so he pursues these men to Dan. And when he catches up with them, of course, obviously their armies are going to be a lot bigger than his 318 servants. And so he makes a plan. It says, and he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. So Abram arrives up in Dan. He sees what he's dealing with. He's got some military strategy about him. Abram, surprisingly enough, despite being a sheep herder, has a little bit of a head on his shoulders. Realizing he's outnumbered, he says, okay, we're going to wait till night. We're going to divide. We're going to get them on a two-front war, and then we're going to push them back that way. And so he waits until night, and of course, God protects and watches over and blesses Abram, and they end up pursuing them all the way to Hobah, and they kill all of them, and they bring back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people. So Abram gets word all this is going on. It's not his problem. It's not his issue. Lot's always been a problem. But knowing and realizing the importance of the word of God, that he is the leader of the family, therefore these people are his responsibility, Abram gets up, he takes his men, and God blesses him in battle, and he wins and gets all the stuff and brings it back. Okay? And many of you are probably going, all right, the end, short chapter. Not quite done yet. Okay? Remember I said this is not only about doing the right thing, it's also about doing it for the right reason. Okay? Oftentimes, God's people will do the right thing, but they don't do it with the correct intent. There are many, many times that we'll go to church, but we're only going to church because we know we're supposed to go. There's many times we'll pray, but we're only praying because we know we're supposed to pray. There's many times we'll look over, study the Bible, or log into a podcast and listen to a guy talk about the Bible simply because we're trying to get done what we're supposed to get done for the day. Guys, if your heart's not in it, if you don't have the right intent behind what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you do the right thing because you're not doing it with the right heart, the right attitude, or the right mindset. Abram here shows that he not only did the right thing, but that he did it with the right heart. Look at what happens. It says, and the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Kedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Seveh, which is the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And he gave him tithes of all. So, Abram returns. You can see him coming back with all the spoils of war, with all the people. It would have been pretty hard to miss this large of a group of people coming into the central part of Canaan. And as he gets there, of course, the king of Sodom starts to go out to meet him. But also this guy we've never heard of before, named Melchizedek, who's the king of Salem, which is the ancient place of Jerusalem. Okay, it's going to be taken over and called Jebus under the Jebusites. And then, of course, David comes in and names it Jerusalem and makes it the capital of Judah. Okay, Melchizedek is king of this particular city, Salem. And there's something else very interesting about him. It says he is the priest of the Most High God, meaning that he was a worshiper of Abram's God. Now, we have no idea where he came from. We have no idea how he got there. We have no idea where this city came into being, how the word of God was here. We don't know anything about this man. And a lot of people have some mystery that surrounds him. And I want to put that to bed now. Okay. In Hebrews, it says, and like Melchizedek, who had no father, no mother. Okay. Everybody goes, oh, Melchizedek. He was, you know, some kind of a immortal man, or he was miraculously brought to earth. He was never actually born. There's all these crazy ideas that start to come up about Melchizedek. Melchizedek is a regular man. He's a man that worshiped God. He was also the king of Salem. He is the proof that Messiah could come and not be of the lineage of Aaron and still be a priest to God, right? We know that Christ has said that he came from the order of Melchizedek, meaning that he was before the founding of Levitical law, okay? Meaning that he could be a priest without being in the line of Aaron. But the idea of him being somebody supernatural is completely far-fetched. What Hebrews is talking about of him having no mother and no father is that there is no recording of this man's family or lineage whatsoever in the Bible. All that we have is that he existed, that he was there, he was a king. That's all we've got. That metaphor that's built there, the symbolism that's used there in Hebrews about Melchizedek is to prove that Jesus Christ could be our high priest, even though he was not in the line of Aaron. So don't get caught up on, oh, this is that guy, all right? He is a king and he is a worshiper of God. He is a priest to God. And he comes out and he blesses Abram and then he blesses God, meaning that he takes the time to say, blessed are you because you are the one that God has chosen to create a nation that's going to bring redemption to the world. But blessed be God, because God was the reason for it all, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And what's awesome about this is that he comes out and he blesses Abram and he blesses God, and Abram gave him tithes of all. People go, oh, and this is the first place that the 10% happened. This was not just 10% of his income. This was 10% of his assets. He comes out, blesses Abram for what he has done, showing that God was, that he did the right thing. Whether we like Lot, don't like Lot, Lot should have been there, doesn't matter. He fulfilled what God required of him as the leader of the family. He did it for the right reason. So Melchizedek comes out and blesses him for it. He did it because God told him to do it. His attitude was that this is what is right, this is what God wants, therefore I'm going to do it. And Abram, after receiving this blessing, not only from Melchizedek, but the blessing that God had delivered his enemies into his hand, he turns right around and gives 10% of everything that he has, a tithe, his animals, his wealth, all of these things, to the priest to worship God. See, there's a final part of the lesson in here that we tend to lose. We not only have to do the right thing for the right reason, but we have to give credit for it to the right person. Look at what happens here. It says, and the king of Sodom said unto Abram. So he witnesses all this, right? He sees Melchizedek come out. He sees this blessing, bread, wine, all these things. He looks at Abram and he says, give me the persons and take the goods to thyself. King of Sodom comes out and he says, just give me my people back, please. You can have everything else as payment for what you have done. And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have lift up mine hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth. Isn't it interesting that he repeats what Melchizedek said, meaning that not only has he done the right thing for the right reason, but Melchizedek has taught him something about God as well, and that is to reverence God. That I will not take from a thread, even to a shoe latchet, which is a very old English way to say sandal strap, okay? And that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abram rich. Abram looks at the king and says, no, I'm not going to take anything for it. I did the right thing for the right reason. And now I'm going to tell you that the person who deserves the credit for it all is not myself, but God. Look at what he says. I'm not going to take any of this, lest thou should say what? I have made Abram rich. Many people look at this and they go, oh, he was, you know, I don't want any of your stuff. You know, it's all tainted Sodom, Gomorrah stuff. Okay. That's not what is indicated here. That's not what he means. He does not want a man to be able to lay claim to his wealth because it is from God that he has been blessed with all of his wealth. He doesn't want to ruin his testimony by taking this man's stuff and giving him the capability to say, oh yeah, everything that he is because I gave him this wealth. He wants people to look at his life and know that it is God that is the one who has blessed him so abundantly. Guys, we can't just do the right thing for the right reason. We've also got to give credit for what we have done and the reason we have done it to the one who deserves glory for it all. Because at the end of the day, you and I would not know how to do the right thing for the right reason if we did not know God. Abram is telling this king, look, what I did was the right thing to do. I did it for the right reason, and I should not be rewarded for doing either of those two things because of the fact it is not me who would have known to do this thing. It's because I know God that I have done this. It is God who has blessed me with the capability of doing this. It is God who has made sure that I would do what is right. So I will not take anything. However, save only that which the young men have eaten, and the portion of the men which went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion. Some of the Amorites and some of these other groups that were attacked went with him during this attack also. We don't really mention a whole lot of what happens there, okay? We just know that some of them made a confederacy with Abram, and they went, okay? Abram says, I'm not going to take any of it because I did the right thing for the right reason. And my God deserves the glory for everything that I do in my life. Therefore, I don't need your physical, I don't need the reward. However, these men helped me. Let them take their portion. Let them have whatever belongs to them. So Abram is not trying to, turn up his nose. Sometimes we as believers to come off so very judgmental because we say we're doing the right thing for the right reason. I'm not going to take the reward. I'm not going to take the reward. And we do it from a place of trying to amass glory to ourselves instead of to God. Abram here is saying, this isn't because I'm being an arrogant snob. This is, I don't deserve a reward for doing what God would have already expected me to do. However, these men, meaning these ones that they were there, they went on their own accord, pay them their portion. Abram's not trying to say we're better than you. Abram's saying that I did what I did for God. Let these men have their part in the reward, though. It is so very important that when we're going about life and we do the right thing for the right reason, that we make sure to point out that whatever it is that we're refusing or why it is that we're doing what we're doing is for God. It's not because of us, and it's not that it's because of them, but rather that it's because of our relationship to our God. So that is chapter 14. It's going to probably be one of the shortest ones we do. It's very cut, very dry, very straightforward. Just lots of big, huge names and kind of trying to piece together what's going on here and what exactly is happening. But so, as you're going about your weekend, number one, put this into practice. Do the right thing for the right reason. Give the honor and the glory to God for it. Don't try to gain for yourself. Number two, go back, read over chapter 14, kind of familiarize yourself with some of this. If any of you want to know how to properly say the names, I will send that information to you. Just let me know. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Tomato, tomato, potato, potato, whatever it takes to get it out of your mouth and you can remember it, I'm cool. I'm on board. All right. And number three, make sure this week, if you're one of our new listeners, to go back, listen to the rest of the podcast, try to kind of get yourself up to speed, kind of fill in some of the blanks from chapter 14 today. And then also, of course, make sure to read over chapter 15.